welcome to the Motley Fool Radio Show. I'm David Gardner, broadcasting from Fool Global Headquarters here in Alexandria, Virginia, here each week to talk about the motley world of money and investing. Our thoughts and prayers, first of all, go out to everyone along the Gulf Coast, everyone affected by Hurricane Katrina. Scenes and images just boggle the mind. We're mindful that this is a very tough time for those affected by the hurricane. Our show is a show about money and business, and we're going to be talking about the business and economic implications of the hurricane. We're then going to take a break from our usual format and present some interviews that we thought were worth another listen, including a conversation with the CEO of Craigslist and a conversation with the author of What Color Is Your Parachute? But we begin this week's show by talking about the hurricane. The human costs are devastating. The death toll is still rising. We know that the economic costs are going to be tremendous. Here to provide some additional perspective is Fool Radio Economics contributor Charlie Whelan, the author of the book Naked Economics. He joins us, as always, from the NPR Bureau in Chicago. Charlie, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Charlie, there are so many directions we could take this discussion. We want to begin by focusing on the insurance component. I want to start by talking with you about insurance from the individual's perspective. Is my insurance covering the damage from the hurricane?
It may or may not. And this is really a good point to teach a small lesson for individual investors. Your first instinct is to decide between stocks and bonds and which stocks to buy and so on. And really the first lesson of personal finance is insure yourself. And most folks may be listening from places where they're not going to get hit by a hurricane or a flood, but there are a whole host of other dangers and they could strike at any moment. So before you go out and pick 401k plans and the rest, make sure you're protected against long-term disability, against getting hit by a bus, or your kid's still going to be able to go to college and so on. Now, to the specifics of Katrina, Your house may not be insured. And I think that's one of the things that's going to be very sad as this all gets sorted out, which is that most homeowners, actually all homeowners policies, do not cover against flood. They cover against wind damage from a hurricane, and there may be water-related damage as a result of that wind damage. So there are actually disputes over if your roof gets blown off and your house fills up with water, is that wind or flood damage? But in this case, in New Orleans in particular, much of the damage is flood-related, and unless you have a separate flood insurance policy, you could get stuck with a whole lot of damage that is not going to be paid for by your traditional homeowner's policy.
I hear you, Charlie, and I think I have to admit, I don't think I have flood insurance.
Well, the thing about flood insurance is you can't buy basic flood insurance on the private market. And one of the big reasons for that is that the people who need it most are in flood-prone areas, and they're not offset in the claims process by people who live at 8,000 feet buying lots of flood insurance like a normal insurance market would be. So instead, the primary flood insurance is offered through a government program. And even that has created some problems because I don't know if we've ever talked about moral hazard on this program, but that's a really important economic concept whereby people act differently once they're insured. The classic example for me was I had car insurance. I used to go down to Hyde Park when I was a PhD student at the University of Chicago, and I'd always park places where there was a high risk my car would get stolen because it was easiest to park. If I hadn't been insured, I never would have parked there. Well, the danger with flood insurance is basically people build houses and live in places where they're likely to get washed away by a flood. And it's even worse than that. After some of the big floods, such as the periodic Mississippi floods, people rebuild houses in places that are still in low-lying areas. So finally, the federal government reformed the program and basically said, we will compensate you for this damage. But in one extreme case, they paid to move an entire town about a half mile away from the Mississippi bank so that next time they'd be on high ground. But there is a real problem in that if you live in a place that's likely to flood, you're least likely to get the flood insurance.
Hmm. Charlie, how about the insurance industry next? How is it affected by a hurricane like this?
Well, it's certainly not good news. On the other hand, they seem better prepared to deal with it than in hurricanes past. So certainly if you're in the insurance business, you recognize that the hurricanes are an economic risk, and we may not even be done for this hurricane season. However, there are tools that the insurance industry can use, just like there are tools that individuals can use to lay off that risk. And the first is you always have to be looking at your portfolio. You don't want to be holding a whole bunch of policies in Miami or Bermuda or in this case, New Orleans. So one of the tools that they're likely to use is reinsurance. People have probably heard about the reinsurance market, mm-hmm. which is basically insurance for insurance companies. So if you look at your portfolio and you've got too much exposure in one place, you can basically lay off that risk by buying insurance from another company on some fraction of that risk. There are also some wild financial tools that have arisen to help insurance companies get rid of that risk, one of which, and this is one of my favorite examples of how clever the financial markets can be, is something called catastrophe bonds. And basically, an insurance company will sell you a bond. So you give them some money, and the payback on that bond is dependent on how bad the hurricane season happens to be. So if it's a really bad hurricane season, as measured by a whole series of objective measures, they're not going to pay you much back. Mm-hmm. If it's not a bad season, you get a nice, healthy return. So what it does is basically take the risk of a lot of hurricane damage and lay it off on somebody like you, whose other exposure is likely to be stocks and bonds and real estate. You can absorb one bad performance by a bond and help that insurance company that could be really devastated by a bad hurricane season pass the risk along. Mm.
The actual amount of dollar damage, of course, is still not fully calculated. We know it's in the billions and billions. And I certainly came across the soundbite once or twice that this was the biggest hit to insurance companies since 9/11. Is it possible that there is so much damage that insurance companies just simply aren't going to be able to pay it out?
I've not seen anything along those lines. It certainly happened in the past. Hurricane Andrew in the 1990s caused, I think, about 11 bankruptcies among insurance companies. Everything I've read so far, I'm not an expert on the insurance industry, but everything I've come across suggests that they are better prepared to deal with this than they were before, in part because of the lessons learned in the past. But remember, as I mentioned before, we're not done with the hurricane season yet, and these things tend to be somewhat correlated. So we'll have to wait and see how things go. But at present, all indications are that it's a tough hit, but it's not likely to be fatal for any insurers.
And certainly the stock market can often be a guide, and the stock market was relatively placid this week. There was not a huge drop or anything in reaction to fears of a coming economic crisis. Now, I think we need to talk about fuel a little bit, because I hear the word crisis attached to oil and gas these days all the time, and all of us at this point are feeling it in our pocketbooks, more so, I'm sure, than we could ever have imagined 5 years ago. What is your thinking in terms of how long these prices stay how high?
Well, it's really curious because for all the talking we've done about gas prices, this is never what we expected would be driving the next spike in prices. On the other hand, if you look at the futures markets and things like that, there's always been some risk of a supply disruption. So a lot of the price increase to date, that kind of steady climb over the course of the summer, was driven on the demand side. We're using a lot of gas. China's using a lot of gas. India's using a lot of gas. This is a major supply disruption. And I would venture to say that some of the direct economic costs of this hurricane may actually outstrip 9/11. Now, 9/11 had huge indirect effects once people stop traveling for psychological reasons and so on. But when you start talking about New Orleans and the Gulf Coast, there are some major disruptions to oil supply, refining capacity, natural gas capacity. And so we're basically taking a huge, relatively large quantity of energy out of the pipeline, literally. And that's one of the things that's driving the rapid, I mean, almost overnight increases in price. I don't know how long it takes to get that supply back online. But here in Chicago, we saw precipitous jumps in prices to gasoline well over $3.25, $3.30 a gallon. And, it's going to be around for a little while. I don't know how long it persists, though.
Mm. Over the years on this show, we have many times talked together about Alan Greenspan. We've talked often about inflation when we think about our economy and what our Fed chief is fighting all the time. Inflation still doesn't seem to be a significant problem in this country. Do you think the gallon of milk is going to start being affected by high gas prices? Are we finally going to see problematic inflation in the next, let's say, 2 years?
You know, I'd be really surprised if we didn't start to see more bulges. And remember, the thing about inflation is as soon as you start to see it, it's pretty much too late. I mean, it's kind of like a disease outbreak that you really need to be nipping it in the bud, because once you start seeing it everywhere, that means I'm going to start raising my prices in response. And you get that spiral that makes it so pernicious and so difficult to turn back. And historically, the way you turn that back is you engineer a recession so that we all feel enough pain that we stop raising prices. So you don't want to get to that point. On the other hand, I've seen snippets of it already. The taxi drivers here in Chicago have asked for some kind of temporary surcharge to relieve their gas pressures. And I think others who are directly affected, you're going to see it in the airline industry with probably additional fuel surcharges. And so I'd be really shocked if we didn't start seeing more than sporadic bursts of higher prices.
Mm. Explain this for us, Charlie. Obviously, fuel prices are affecting all businesses. You order a computer online, it gets flown or driven to your house. That gallon of milk needs to be driven to your supermarket. How can rising fuel prices not affect what we buy every day?
Well, it absolutely affects the folks who are making that computer or selling you the coffee or what have you. The question is, and this is the question that Alan Greenspan is going to be wrestling with, is to what extent can those producers pass on the cost to you without you balking and it turning out to be counterproductive for them? So let me give you an example. My kids are taken care of by a woman who's married to a limo driver. She came in this morning and said, apropos of nothing, gasoline is $3.30 a gallon. So there is no question but that that is a major input in his business. He cannot, however, turn around and charge $5 more for every trip to the airport because people are going to take a taxi or they're going to take the L or they're going to drive and park. So the question is, to what extent will he or other producers absorb that price increase, and to what extent can they pass it along to consumers without consumers balking? And that is what Alan Greenspan's got to measure. If everybody starts passing these price increases along and we see a general increase in the price level as a result, then his only tool is to ratchet up interest rates and slow down demand to the point that we're no longer willing to pay higher prices, and that will stabilize the price level. But it's tricky for anybody who is doing almost any kind of business, some more exposed than others, but they're wrestling with the extent to which they can try and recover these higher prices that they're having to pay by passing them along.
Charlie Whelan is the author of Naked Economics. He is this show's economics expert. Charlie Whelan, thank you once again for joining us on the Motley Fool Radio Show.
A pleasure as always.
On the Motley Fool Radio Show, we discuss personal finance and investing. People, including the hosts, the guests, the callers, and you, our listeners, may have interest in the stocks discussed. Don't buy or sell stocks based solely on what you hear. Do your homework and make your own decisions. And remember, donations can be made to help hurricane victims online at FEMA.gov. That's FEMA.gov.